live at AsylumFantasyFootball.com. It's the Tuesday Night Blitz.
Yes, indeed. We're Fleeger and Briggs. Thanks for joining the Asylum. Drop us a line at AsylumFootball@gmail.com.
On Twitter, a Twitter feed of note, at AsylumFootball.
Yes, indeed. Well, let's get to it, Rick. Oh, yes, and all you locals, WSRU 88.1 FM, the voice of the rock.
Yes, sir, Rick. A jam-packed show as we start off our division previews by hitting the AFC and NFC North divisions tonight.
Yes, indeed. And we're going to cover the NFC North. We might as well get to it right now. And as you bring him on, I'm going to introduce, he's a sports editor and commentator for WKKC in Chicago, and he's a program director and radio personality for WGCR.us, Mr. Keith Reed. Keith, welcome to the Asylum.
Good to have you. Glad to be here. Thank you.
Good. Can you hear us okay?
I can hear you fine.
Okay, sounds good. Yeah, we just kind of wanting to hit every division here, and we just think one of the most competitive divisions right now is the NFC North. As we kind of talked when we were getting you to come on the show, it seems to be, even though Detroit to me seems to be lagging a little bit, they're potentially all four good enough to make the playoffs this year.
Seems that the only thing with the Lions, they kill themselves. They really beat themselves. They really did it last year. All the penalties. They won games. They could have been in contention.
I think we had some connection issues there. Rick, Keith, you still with us?
Still here.
There he went. All right. I think you broke up there a little bit. Yeah, in looking at the Lions, it's interesting, offensively, with Calvin Johnson, with Matt Stafford, a lot they can do, and Dodekom Sue on the defensive side. It's just, it sort of still seems like Lions football. It doesn't matter. Bringing in Reggie Bush, sort of skipping ahead here a little bit. When we talk fantasy football, Reggie Bush, really a much maligned guy over his career. Now, going into this season and fitting into that Lions offense, getting a lot of fantasy love in terms of fantasy football and NFL-wise, is this a guy you see getting first-team carries, really being the standard bearer? We still have Mikel LeShore in town, Joyke Bell. Do you see Reggie Bush really taking that job by the horns, or are we going to see sort of a three-headed monster there in Detroit?
I can see Reggie Bush taking that job by the horns. He can definitely carry 20 to 25 touches. I still believe he has the potential to do that. Remember that he came off of a solid season at Miami last year. So there's definitely something there. Of course, going back to his years with the Saints playing on a nice, fast turf playing indoors again, I think the client will be very comfortable for him. I think he can do very well for the Lions. He can't hurt him.
Yeah, I agree there. There's always pass-catching threat out of the backfield on top of that, and plus you have Calvin Johnson, of course. Matt Stafford has no shortage of weapons with Ryan Broyles. There's a lot more expected of him. But I guess really the first question, since you're basically out of Chicago, can Chicago overcome Green Bay and take that division this year in your mind?
They can. And folks have to remember, last season the combined total was less than 12 points of the Pack's victories against the Bears. It was a play here, it was a play there. So the key to the Bears, though, to beating Green Bay is keeping possession, keeping Jay Cutler on his feet. And that goes for every game that they play this season, but especially against the Pack.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. I think they've got a much improved offensive line. I hope they can come together in time for the season because they have to keep Cutler on his feet. There's no doubt about that. Forte's health definitely needs to be a premier concern. Hey, they've got my favorite receiver in the NFL, Brandon Marshall. I think this guy is unstoppable. And I think if Ashon Jeffrey can stay healthy and you get a little 1-2 punch in the receiving core, I really think they can do it myself. I mean, they were 10-6 last year, and quite frankly, I thought Lovie Smith got run out on a rail unnecessarily.
Well, that's one of the you're outside of Chicago, but inside Chicago, the thing was Lovie had to get to the playoffs. He hasn't been there in 3 of the last 4 years previously, so I think the time was right for the change, especially with the removal and putting with Phil Emery coming in last year as a GM. So with Jerry Angelo's exit the previous year, which was kind of Lovey's right-hand man, the handwriting was pretty much on the wall at that point.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And looking at that team, I think Jay Cutler is going to be the key. I'm curious, somebody maybe a little closer to it. Jay Cutler, boy, in stretches, he really looks like a premier quarterback, especially with Brandon Marshall. Is Jay Cutler a playoff-caliber, playoff-winning quarterback, or are the bad games enough to outweigh – the good games enough to outweigh the bad, I guess I should say?
This is not a good – Rex Bad Rex Grossman like it was previously during the Bears Super Bowl run in 2007. Jay Cutler, when he has time, he can make the throws. He's already been to an NFC title game. So he's already gotten that off his to-do list. The thing of it is, how fast can he learn the new offense that Mark Trestman is installing? If they can get it down pat, the weapons are there. The Bears can easily score 30 points a game. And my opinion is, as it's been the last few years, if the Bears can put up 24 points or more, most of the games they'll win.
Yeah, I agree there with that defense that they have. And from what I've seen, just a little bit of them so far in preseason, still look like it's going to be pretty stout this year. One question I had... looking at the depth of Chicago, I mean, I see Josh McCown backs up Cutler. Eric Weems and Earl Bennett are the backup wide receiver positions. Forte, given his injury history, I guess, you know, do you think from what you've seen, do they have like that next man up personnel mentality in Chicago to stay competitive if they happen to suffer some injuries?
Everywhere except for a quarterback, but even with Josh McCown there, I would be more confident in him than they had Jason Campbell last year, because that was just a total disaster. That was just a $2 million waste as far as I'm concerned. But as far as Matt Forte is concerned, the big thing with him, his injury problems because of his use. Because the first 3 years in the NFL, he had nearly 1,000 touches because they got him the ball. He had 300 running play, so you can't do that to a running back. Sooner or later, you have to kind of dial him down a little bit. And with the offense that the Bears have and with the weapons that they have, Forte will be much more effective because he's still going to get quality touches, but you don't burn him out.
Do you believe that his touches will go down? I know that was a big source of contention with him going back a couple of seasons. A lot of guys questioning his toughness. Not among them, and I like bringing in the help they brought for him. However, do you actually see his touches going down? I think oftentimes when a new coach has a weapon, a toy like Forte, for lack of a better term, they tend to overuse him. Do you see his role going down to a point where he can stay healthy and still be successful?
I see probably his touches on the ground dropping a little bit, but I can very much see him using as a check down option in the backfield. I do see him catching a lot more swing passes, and I think that's where he'll be more effective because he'll have some open room. And if you saw him in some of the preseason games already, he does have that breakaway speed, so it looks like if they can keep him in that format, Forte will be fine.
Yeah, and I think that's probably the best role for him for the team and in terms of, for the purposes of this show, for fantasy football. Let's jump on to the Packers real quick. Obviously, Aaron Rodgers, I'm going to guess, in our opinion, the best quarterback maybe in the league, definitely certainly in the division. I think first question you have to ask going into the season is the Brian Bulaga injury. How concerning is that for Aaron Rodgers and for Packers fans specifically?
I wouldn't be too concerned about it because one thing about Green Bay, and you have to like what the coaching staff has done, they find the way to get guys plugged in. If there's a team that has a next man up, it would be the Pack. And being the guy that Aaron Rodgers is, he's going to find ways to get those guys the ball. So I'm not really concerned about that.
And I just had a question talking about, as we move around a little bit in the division, Minnesota was 10-6 last year. They lose Percy Harvin. They pick up Greg Jennings from Green Bay. They've actually moved Joe Webb to wide receiver. And going back to, I guess, Forte, you were talking about the workload on him, which brought up the question. We saw him come back tremendously from that devastating knee injury before, but I seem to think they have to start taking the load off of Adrian Peterson. You know, is Ponder the guy good enough to do that, really?
I think if with the right offense, he will be. And knowing what Leslie Frazier has done, I think that he'll kind of tool change a little bit, because you know teams are going to be targeting Peterson. You already know that. So obviously he's going to have to find some ways to kind of do like Forte, be a little more creative in how AP gets the ball. Also, he's going to have to find a way to get some of his other receivers involved too. So I think Webb can get, and you don't really need a whole lot from Webb. If you can get 50 to 60 catches out of him.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, it's just concerning to me the amount of carries that he has. But like you said, the right offense to reduce it, they just have to, I think, because you're just going to wear them out.
Yeah, and swinging back to the Packers as we talk about the running game, we'll get back to the Vikings. I'm interested that the competition, Eddie Lacy, Jonathan Franklin, a lot of debate in fantasy circles. Eddie Lacy really looked impressive in his last preseason outing. How do you see the carries being distributed there, and is either one going to emerge as a number one guy and see enough carries to have any type of fantasy value?
I think if there's going to be a feature back in that offense, it'll probably be Lacy. Not only has he looked good in preseason, but you have to remember some of the things last year with the injuries of Cedric Benson. He did quite a bit. And anything that the running game can provide for Aaron Rodgers, as far as I'm concerned, is a bonus.
Yeah, and speaking with that, obviously going to be a pass-first offense. The Greg Jennings leaving, I'm not sure how big of a hit you feel that is. Jordy Nelson's health concerns. We see injuries across that wide receiver core. Is he the type of quarterback, a Tom Brady type, where it's not going to matter what type of weapons he has in the receiving game, or do you have any concerns about the guys who have left and the Jordy Nelson injury concerns?
No, I don't have any concerns about that. Aaron Rodgers was a guy that, even if you remember the Super Bowl a couple years ago, the lot of the drops said his name, he kept getting them the ball, and eventually they make plays. One thing about the Packers that, yes, that they'll drop some balls, but at crunch time when catches need to be made, they find a way to get those completions. So Aaron Rodgers is at the level of Tom Brady. If I had to pick between those two right now, as a quarterback, to me right now, I would probably say Aaron Rodgers is better as far as a natural QB, kind of like a Dan Marino, if you would.
Yeah, he certainly has stepped in and filled and expanded the shoes of Brett Favre, without a doubt, as far as that goes. I want to get back to Chicago just for a minute. And I've seen this guy playing for Florida, the John Bosick, the rookie inside linebacker they drafted. And everything that I've heard, he seemed to be looking good and could certainly break into that starting role in the linebacker situation for Chicago. Have you paid any attention to him much in the preseason?
Yes, he has. He has looked very good, very athletic. I think the thing with him is that he'll probably end up being the new Urlacher. Probably it'll take about 3 to 4 years because Lance Briggs will be calling the defensive signals for the Bears defense this season. And once Bostic gets that terminology down, gets that system down, because the Bears are still going to play the base system. They're not going to play the Tampa cover two that Lovie Smith had. They'll play a version of it. But once Bostic gets that system down, eventually he will be the new Olakor. As far as the athletic, all of the tools are right there. It's just a matter of him getting reps, getting games, getting that NFL experience.
Yeah, and I think he's going to be a perfect fit in that defense myself. One thing, you know, of course, we focus on fantasy football, so we just wanted to get your take. Go ahead and rank the quarterbacks in the NFC North from best to worst.
Best to worst. Okay, well, it has to be Aaron Rodgers first. Then comes Matt Stafford, and then you will take Jay Cutler as third, even though they're type 1, 2, and 3. Christian Ponder is still pretty much an unproven himself. Once he has a chance to really get some games in, if he can start to put up some numbers, he would be at the bottom of the pack. But that division of quarterbacks is probably the best stacked at that position in the NFL to me. I can't see any division where you have three quarterbacks that are Super Bowl caliber quarterbacks.
Yeah, no question about it. I'm curious about Christian Ponder and what your thoughts as someone who's a little closer to that division. The kid managed to win 10 games last year quite impressively. Has the weapons around him, obviously, losing Percy Harvin hurts, bringing in Greg Jennings, not equal, but certainly a weapon there. Adrian Peterson's just a robot. He's amazing. He does what he does, irregardless of the system they're in. Is Christian Ponder good enough to lead a team through the playoffs? He obviously got them there last year. Is he a good enough with the weapons around him for that Minnesota team to be a contender in such a good division?
I think it is. It's just a matter of him or being opened up. And once Leslie Frazier decides to kind of open up the offense, I think you'll see a lot of the skills that Ponder has. As of right now, it's not featured because you have AP in that backfield. So I think as the season goes along, I think probably around November, December, you'll start to see the Christian Ponder that a lot of folks kind of were waiting to see coming out. So it's just a matter of time.
So as we look at this division, obviously going to be very competitive. Minnesota, a playoff team last year. How do you see this division shaking out top to bottom in terms of at the end of the season when all the dust settles, how are they going to finish in this division?
Wow. I do see at least one wild card coming out. I do believe it will be the Bears and Packers fighting for the division title. Right now, I would pick the Pack, because simply they have found a way to beat the Bears, especially the last 3 years. So if you have to take the division right now, pick the Packers first, the Bears second, the Vikings a solid third, and as far as the Lions, they can be they keep themselves. If they can stop committing stupid penalties, a lot of silly coaching decisions, they can very much be competitive. But if I had to rank them from top to bottom, Packers, Bears, Vikings, Lions.
Yeah, and that seems to be the story in the NFC. We were talking earlier on some shows, the NFC North, just what we've been talking about, very tightly contested. It looks like the NFC West is a very interesting division. We've got Seattle and San Francisco. We got the Rams, who were 4-1-1 in the division, and now with Carson Palmer in Arizona, they may be able to score points. Yeah, New Orleans has stepped back with Sean Payton coming up. That South is going to be hotly contested. And the East is the East. It's going to be – I mean, the NFC North – or excuse me, the whole NFC conference to me is up in the air. And the wild card is going to be a real premium spot because there's a lot of teams in that conference that very well could be a playoff contender, but sort of like the Bears last year – could be 10-6 and out.
Right, and I think in the NFC there'll probably be maybe one or even two teams that go 10-6 and don't make the playoffs. One thing about I would say that yes, the NFC is there are many more teams that are capable, but the AFC is still the stronger conference to me. But the NFC will be very exciting. Like I said, I can easily see two teams go 10-6 and don't play beyond that 16th game.
Yeah, no question about it. And when you look at, you know, going back to the Lions, this is a team that amazes me. You've made the point that if they just quit shooting themselves in the foot, the offensive weapons this team has, that team can go out and score 40 any given week. And that team would probably have been 12-4 last year if they only played 57 minutes. They gave up so many games at the end, got big leads and lost them. You could see this division completely flip. There's no way I see the Packers finishing last in that division, but any one of those teams can compete. You know, sort of I might move just based on the Christian Ponder factor. I like and move them underneath the Lions. The Lions could just as easily go 12-4 as 4-12. Just an interesting team, an interesting division, and I can't wait to see how it all plays out.
It's going to be a lot of fun. I think all of the games will be close. I don't see any NFC North blowouts. I do see probably the division winner with a division record of 500.
Yeah, that's very possible. When you're playing teams like that twice going through there, that's six awful tough games. you know, you're talking about the Lions. I hate harping on them, but they had the third overall offense last year and the 13th rated defense. And to me, it's hard to translate a 4-12 season out of that, but certainly they did. And like Rick was pointing out, I think they're very capable of being a 9-7 team this year, even though I still think they're the weakest team in there.
Yeah, and that's a statement for them to be the weakest team in the division and yet still have the potential to win 9-10, maybe even 11 games if they put things together.
Yeah, that's for sure. And it's hard to say. I mean, we can just harp on and on about how close this division is going to be, and I can't wait for it to play out. And, you know, and Keith, we certainly appreciate you coming on, talking some NFC North with us, and I would really like to get you back on again sometime.
Well, I appreciate you having me, and I look forward to coming back on again. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, Keith. You have a good one now.
I'm saying to you, thank you, guys.
All right, Rick, well, there we go. There is our NFC North preview. I'm hoping we're still on the air as I'm touching buttons. Looks like we are, so good news there. So, well, wait, we got a couple minutes before we get in the AFC North, Rick. I want to hit on some of the headlines. I think the biggest one, Von Miller, 6-game suspension today became official. I know last night they were talking about trying to negotiate it down to 4. I don't know how you do that. Goodell doesn't seem like a guy you negotiate with. What I'm surprised is you see people – you see experts, pundits out there saying how big this drops Denver in their final rankings and their final standing with that offense. Obviously, this is a big hit to them. It's only 6 games. I think out of those 6 games, Peyton Manning will will you 4 wins. Is this as big a deal as they're making out of it on that four-letter network we all know so well?
I think it is. I really do. I mean, their defense is one of the better defenses in the league, and yeah, look, there's some injuries on that Denver line. They lost their center, and, you know, they're going to have to piece some stuff together. And Peyton Manning's, what, 38 years old, although I believe in him for sure. But, you know, you're talking only 6 games. That's over a third of the season. So that's significant.
All right. Again, here's going to be my argument. Peyton Manning, Demaryius Thomas.
Oh, are they going to be, Welker. I mean, is it going to be, you know, a bad, no. No, I see what you're saying that way, especially in that division. I don't think it's going to hurt them that
there's no
badly.
Competition in that division.
I still think it's going to be significant for the team, though.
Mm-hmm.
I really do because, you know, let's face it, you get out there, there's a lot of chemistry there, and he's one of the top stars.
Well, yeah, certainly no question about it. I'm thinking in terms of wins and losses, don't have their first 6-game schedule in front of me, thinking it's not going to affect them that badly. If it costs them 1 or 2 games, all right, they go from a 14-2 team to a 12-4 team. Still going to win that division by 5 games, so I'm not concerned about that whatsoever. So I think obviously a big deal, a big hit to that defense. What's a good defense as you shuffle around over there? You're making an awful lot of noise, Rick.
Yeah, as many things you've been knocking over.
I'll tell you
the
what,
whole time.
Thank God we have a guest on tonight because I've been here since, what, 2 o'clock? We spent a lot of time together. I usually peek behind a curtain. We go on air at 6:30. I usually come busting through the door at 20 after, and I've got all the equipment with me, so we slap it together real quick. Don't actually talk to Rick all that much, which is a good thing. And, hey, if you have a chance, we had a text message interaction when I was on my way up. Go to our Twitter feed, @AsylumFootball, and check it out. In case you think any of this is shtick for the show, check that out. This is our average conversation.
Yeah, it is. I mean, we are polite to each other on the show. So
we had a nice little afternoon, though. We went shopping. We just went out and got a bite to eat here. It was a nice little afternoon. I had a good time with you.
Oh, I just can't wait till it gets cooler and we can fire up the fireplace.
There we go. And we did some wiring in the studio. We've had quite a productive afternoon. So.
Which is saying something for us.
No, that's certainly true. And let's look at it, sticking with a few headlines we'll get before the caller comes in. Obviously, Le'Veon Bell. Here's a kid. I'm sure we'll talk about him a lot in this AFC North preview upcoming. Here's a kid can't stay healthy. I'm getting concerned. Rick, the question I want to ask you, and maybe we'll ask the guest when he comes on, looking like Jonathan Dwyer is probably going to end up being the number one running back in this season, upcoming season.
Well, at least to start with, anyway. Yeah.
You know, and I don't think anything's come out yet. I fear when they say it's the center of the foot, you're talking that Liz Frank business, whoever that chick is.
Scary.
But she's ruined more NFL careers than, well, I can't say that on the air. So, Jonathan Dwyer, if we find out Bell's going to be out for an extended period of time, Rick, is Dwyer a guy who moves up into a low-end number two running back category for you?
Yeah. I tell you what, with this team, I don't think so. I really don't think so. I mean, I think Jonathan Dwyer is a, you know, from what I've seen in preseason, he's actually been running pretty good, but he just doesn't have that explosiveness. And you need that. I mean, they have Howling, which would be a nice change of pace back with him. And, of course, Redmond's still there. I don't know what his status is. Baron Batch has been underwhelming to me from what I've seen so far. And, you know, a lot's going to be resting on Le'Veon Bell.
Yeah, no question.
I mean, I don't have a whole lot of confidence in Jonathan Dwyer. Like I said, I think he's an adequate back. He looks pretty good in preseason. He's just not all that explosive. And he's, you know, he leaves a lot of yards on the field, I think. He comes down. He doesn't seem to break as many tackles as some of the slower backs you would think do.
True.
That. And he doesn't have that explosiveness to pull away from people.
Yeah, no question about it. So we'll save a little bit of that for the preview, Rick. Let's jump on. The other piece of big news come out this afternoon. Michael Vick has been named as the Eagles' starting quarterback.
Surprise, surprise.
I did a mock draft last night, Rick. Waited too long on the quarterbacks. I've been catching Russell Wilson about the 8th or 9th round. Now, this was an odd mock. I don't think you're going to see this all that often. Guys started taking second quarterbacks in the 8th and 9th rounds, 12-team league. So I was down to I was in the Josh Freeman, Ben Roethlisberger, Andy Dalton territory.
Right.
So I went back-to-back quarterbacks, got Freeman, but not sure how I feel about him. That's not the point of this. I got Michael Vick, Rick, in the 11th round of a 12-team draft. Here's a guy. Does he finish in that top 12? I don't know. He certainly has the capability of doing that. I think he's proven that. This Chip Kelly offense excites me. Assuming he's healthy, this is his job to lose. I know we have the turnover issues. Michael Vick, fantasy relevant to you?
Oh, yeah. He sure is this year. He seems to be a lot happier. The whole atmosphere in Philadelphia has changed. And obviously you worry about with him running and everything, a bit of an injury bug sometimes and his turnovers. But, I can see him being extremely relevant this year.
Yeah, and I think this gives him the opportunity. I don't know. They don't show much in preseason. Obviously not sure how the Chip Kelly offense translates into the NFL, if he even runs this traditional Chip Kelly offense we keep talking about. But if he does, if they do, this is tailor-made for Michael Vick. With the turnovers, I think you can live with that. In the preseason, they've been running plays so fast, 20, 25 seconds and gone every time, not using the full play clock. They're moving like the never has an offense been tailored to Michael Vick like that. Fits right into the system. Have to assume why that's why he has the job.
And he made the comment that, he likes that football's actually fun again.
Yeah,
him, so.
Stuff like that makes a difference.
Sure
it really does. So Michael Vick, look, this is a guy I'm going to be targeting. I'd still like to get Russell Wilson in that 8th, 9th round where I've been getting him. But I'll pair him up with a Michael Vick. You always have the concerns. I'm high on Russell Wilson, but you always have the concerns of the sophomore slump or just simply that tough division he's playing in out there. Michael Vick, here's a guy you can get as your number two. I don't generally carry two quarterbacks. If I got a chance to get a hold of Michael Vick, sit him there. I can wait 2 or 3 games, see how this is going to play out. This could be like Michael Vick 3 or 4 years ago that propelled how many fantasy teams to a championship. Not saying it's going to happen, but this possibility certainly exists.
Oh, no doubt about that. And, it should be interesting. I tell you what, going back to just that NFC talk, and we'll cover some of these other divisions later, but I think there are some stronger teams in the AFC, but I just don't think, division-wise, I mean, top to bottom, all 4 divisions, I mean, they're pretty doggone competitive.
Oh, yeah, if you look at it, no throwaway divisions like there is in the AFC West, which
right.
I think
exactly.
Is a runaway. Maybe the AFC is a little more top-heavy. Top to bottom,
saying.
The
yeah.
NFC. Look, Tampa Bay, they're a few breaks away from being a solid team last year.
Yeah,
just
look,
another late-season collapse.
New Orleans is coming back. You have Atlanta. Carolina certainly on the rise. In the South, very tight. The East is the East. I mean, from Giants,
yeah.
Eagles, Redskins, Cowboys, it's going to be a dogfight the whole way through. And we've already talked about the West and the North.
Well, here's what I'll have to say about it, Rick. Real quick, I believe the caller's on the line, and we'll jump right to him. Name 6 teams. six teams in the NFC that can't compete for a playoff spot. I don't think you can.
Oh, I can't either.
Probably Tampa Bay, probably Carolina, although they always play their division, but just Atlanta, New Orleans, so
right.
tough. You go out west, every one of those teams, Arizona, maybe you can throw them out, but they're better, certainly
yeah.
better. Every team in the north, playoff capable. I think you could easily name that many teams in the AFC. I think maybe more top-heavy with Denver, with New England, with some of these real stout
right.
teams. But top-to-bottom competitiveness, it's almost impossible to predict the NFC for me.
I agree 100%. So you say we have them on the
yes,
line.
Yes, sir.
Okay,
Let's get to our AFC North preview.
Yes, indeed.
Near and dear to our hearts.
Yeah, you better believe it.
Especially after last night.
We're going to bring on you. Know him. Would you quit talking? We're trying to bring the guest
I'm
on.
Sorry.
Do
your thing.
Yes. You know him on Twitter as at Dan Claskins. He's on SiriusXM Fantasy, ESPN 1530, and Fox Sports 1360. Dan, you there?
How are we doing today, fellas?
We are doing just wonderful. Welcome on to the asylum. We're glad you can make it.
I appreciate you having me on. It's hard to believe we got just over 2 weeks. Everything kicks off, man.
Yeah, and as a talking the AFC North and as a Steeler fan, I wish we had a few more weeks after that game last night. Huge concerns, a lot of hand-wringing going on here in Western Pennsylvania this morning.
Yeah, I mean, obviously that's a nice little setback, but we'll just have to see how it all pans out. I mean, that's the beautiful part of preseason, man. You never know what you're going to get. Injuries, everything everybody's trying to hope to avoid. I guess like all fantasy owners out there, Steelers fans, sort of holding their breath for some news on Le'Veon Bell and the other stuff going on there.
Yeah, you're not kidding. And it seems to be, I tell you, I haven't seen such a rash of injuries. It seems like maybe it's just in my mind, but it just seems to be a rash of them so far this preseason. And serious ones on top of that, you know. I mean, so many guys are out for the year.
I mean, you can look up and down every roster, and it's the case, really. I mean, it seems fresh in our minds right now that, yeah, this preseason, we've had some big names go down early, a lot of these season-ending type of injuries. But the reality of it is every team, their main goal in the preseason is not to lose anybody. And maybe it's another reason that they – do need to look at shortening this preseason schedule up a little bit, but it's football, fellas. Anytime they put on pads and start hitting each other, you know, names could certainly go down, and whether they're playing against another team or, you know, and within their own team. But going back to something you guys were talking about right as I was coming on there, and, you know, you look at the AFC this year compared to the NFC, and it's really not as deep, man. I've said it all along. I think you got 8 to 10 teams in the NFC that I could see not only making the playoffs, but winning a playoff game or more. And I look at the AFC, and I have a tough time coming up with even half that number of teams that, you know, really are Super Bowl contenders, teams that could get in there, and we could end up seeing play up in New York come February.
Yeah, no question about it. Again, I think top-heavy with your Denvers, with your New Englands, a lot of teams that can certainly run through and win. But and you look at traditionally, as we talk about the AFC North, traditionally a powerhouse division, I have my questions about it this year. I think Cincinnati taking a huge step forward, pretty much the consensus winner of that division going into the year, although they're Cincinnati. They had a good season last year. Traditionally, now you take a huge step back. Steelers, an 8-8 team who I feel only got worse in the offseason. The Ravens just got ravaged in the offseason after winning that Super Bowl, although they're starting to creep back up. You know, a good draft, a good offseason, but a lot of question marks there. Cleveland really seems to be the team on the rise, but does anybody buy Cleveland as a potential playoff team and division champion? How, when it's all said and done, when the dust settles, do you see this division shaking out?
You know, I really think you hit it right on the head. I mean, Cleveland's a team that I'm definitely buying on, Rick. I think it's a team that you're going to see make huge strides, and it really started long ago in the offseason when, you know, the day they started, you know, plucking new names to come in and be part of this organization, with starting with Michael Lombardi returning up there and, you know, making some personnel decisions, and then obviously hiring Rob Krasinski and Norv Turner. Not that I was crazy about Norv Turner as a head coach, but, you know, coming in there as the offensive coordinator and following it up, bringing in an up-and-coming defensive coordinator like Ray Horton. I mean, leadership throughout is translated into what I think is going to be some good things for Cleveland. I really like what I'm seeing there. I mean, from a fantasy standpoint, you know, which is where I make, you know, my bread and butter, I look at Cleveland and suddenly I see a lot of guys there presenting good value. I mean, everybody's talking about Trent Richardson, his potential to get 300 carries. I definitely see it. I think, obviously, with, you know, durability has always been a question there. So they're already a little shaken up behind him, which is going to lead to what I think is even going to be a larger workload. But really it comes down in this entire division from top to bottom. I mean, it's going to come down to offensive lines, if you ask me. And now I look at offensive lines, and there's no doubt that the Bengals, if they don't – I mean, in my opinion, they have the best offensive line in the division, if not the entire conference. And, you know, I think that's going to end up paying – you know, we're going to see that have more results in this, you know, smash-mouth division where often it is one at the line. You're still going to see a lot of defensive tenacity, but I don't think there's another line in this division that matches up. And at the end of the day, I mean, that's where football games are won and lost. I think it's going to be no different this year.
Yeah, you're right. And, you know, you're talking about the defenses in that division. Look, there's going to be four defenses that are pretty doggone good. There's no doubt about it. But I agree with you. I think Cincinnati's division right now. I want to touch on Cleveland. I think you hit it right on the head. They're really, really on the move up. I like a lot of criticism when Cleveland drafted a 28-year-old rookie. And certainly not comparing him to Roger Staubach, but just from the point of that age is working to his advantage now. He's a second-year guy, but, boy, he looks really mature right now in preseason. I mean, the short stuff that we've seen. But I think that's going to really translate into an advantage for him.
Yeah, I mean, Brandon Weeden, he really was lost last season. I mean, you know, you're going in there as a rookie. A lot of question marks. And the thing is Pat Shurmur and his staff, I mean, it really didn't play well to his suits. I mean, they drafted him more out of a need than as a guy that fits. And there's no doubt that, you know, when Krzyzewski came in here, he didn't feel like it was the perfect fit. What we're seeing is they're starting to cater that offense a little bit more to his style. And, you know, that's the key with any quarterback in the NFL. If you look at, you know, try to play to their strong suits, do what they do well. Brandon Weeden has the opportunity to be a more efficient quarterback. I think the numbers are a little skewed. You get a guy like Greg Little on a record pacing set for drops. And, you know, once again, the line last year, they, you know, had their fair share of injuries. I think it will be much improved this season. But also, you're starting to surround him with some playmakers. You know, we talked about Trent Richardson. You look at Josh Gordon. He's a freak over there. I think he's got a lot of potential to emerge. And I'm real excited about some of the no-name receivers that they sort of added to the mix. Devon Best thinks going to be the perfect little veteran mix there, guy that, you know, going to run his routes, going to run them on every down. He's going to be able to come up and get those tough catches to help move the chain. And then David Nelson, the former Buffalo Bill, a guy that, you know, I had a strong affinity for when in his college days down at University of Florida because he was a unique player type. He's come off a major knee injury. He's been real slow to get back in the mix, but he could end up paying dividends, and I really love Jordan Cameron. I mean, we've got a small taste of what he can do this preseason, and, you know, if all that comes together, I think Brandon Weeden's not going to have to win too many football games for the Browns. It's just about not having a quarterback lose games.
Yeah, and talking about Trent Richardson, obviously a feature back. You mentioned the 300-carry mark. Is this a guy, can he hold up for that amount of carries as a fantasy owner, as a guy drafting him in the top 10, pushing the top five as ADPs go here, the closer we get to the season, can he hold up for that amount of carries and that amount of time over the season?
I believe he will. I believe he will. I think, I mean, he's had some injury issues. A lot of running backs do, but at the same time, I think he's young. He's as dynamic as anybody out there. You look at him and even Doug Martin from last year's rookie class, and, you know, those are running backs that can really impact the franchise and really change a culture, all, you know, really all by themselves, so they can get it done. I look at this year's rookie class, you know, going over to, you know, somebody like Pittsburgh's Le'Veon Bell and even the Bengals with Giovanni Bernard here, we'll talk about in a bit, I'm sure. Just not as deep as it. I mean, you can't compare last year's class to this year's class. I think last year's class is a whole different dynamic. And from a fantasy standpoint, Trent Richardson's a guy that I continue to rise up my draft boards. Particularly in PPR formats, he's going to be able to get a lot of catches out of the backfield. So when we look at those 300-plus touches, it's not going to all be on the ground. And I also just, you know, looking at some of the other backs, I definitely take my chances with him as compared to somebody like Arian Foster, who obviously has had his injury concerns. You know, I'm definitely moving him up into the boards, probably right now somewhere around 5 or 6 in my rankings. And, you know, and that all the players in front of him, obviously running backs as well, so.
Hey, not to get too far off script, but you bring up Arian Foster. Is this more of the same from him? You know, always an injury concern in the preseason, seems to come up, do what he does in the regular season. This back injury concerns me a little bit. He is sliding down my draft board. I did a mock last night. He ended up going about 10th, I think. And I know I passed him up in the 7th spot. Is this finally the year all our concerns come to fruition, or is this just Arian Foster being Arian Foster?
I'm a little more concerned than normal. I mean, the numbers certainly are there saying, hey, this guy's had a large workload, almost 400 touches a year ago. He hasn't even been on the practice field, fellas, since really the end of last season. And you know, you're already talking about, before the news broke, of now needing injections, and his week one status is in doubt. And, yeah, I mean, he's sliding down draft boards. Even before, I mean, the longer he sits out, the longer he slides down. And I think while running back is still very much a very elite and thinned out position, I think the top tier running back one guys, there's more of them this year than years past. You got 7-8 named guys on the list, you know. A few of them right here in this division we're talking about, with Trent Richardson, Ray Rice, obviously Peterson, you know, he's going to be poised to be a top pick. Doug Martin's in there, C.J. Spiller, LeSean McCoy. I mean, I'm looking up and down this list, like, okay, why would I take a risk on a guy here? I think with fantasy, I always want to try to jump off a guy a year too early rather than a year too late, and I think it's time to jump off this bandwagon now. If he were to slide far enough, you know, maybe in the round two somewhere, he might be worth looking at. But until we know more, until we really see how this pans out, I'm not going to want my running back to one and have all these question marks, especially when if you draft him, then you're going to have to go and burn a fourth or fifth round pick just to handcuff Ben Tate's backup to it. And, you know, to me, that's just too much of a price to pay when there's so many options are there, particularly at the beginning of a draft when you start to lay the foundation for your fantasy squad.
I agree 100%. He's sliding down my board, and as Rick mentioned, he's sliding down his. You said the same thing. I tell you, guy, that's...
Well, when would you take him? When would you take Arian Foster? Just out of curiosity, how far would he have to slide down on your board?
Right now, I would probably, you know, given maybe some definitive news of what's going on with his back and so forth, right now, I don't think I'd take him before about 10 or 11. You know, the overall pick, and that's probably about as early right now.
Because, like, so, 10 or 11, you're seeing guys like Marshawn Lynch there. And, you know, I mean, I don't know. I think I'm just going to avoid it altogether. If I have to draft tonight, or we don't know any more news by the time this weekend rolls around when I go down to Louisville for the high stakes action there at the Kentucky Fantasy Football State Championships from these leagues I got this weekend, Arian Foster doesn't exist to me right now in my brain in those early rounds, because I'm guessing there's going to be at least one, if not more, owners in my league that's going to definitely take him a lot sooner than I would.
Yeah, and I think that's what it boils down to. It's not necessarily where he falls in the draft for me. It's the guys I'm going to move ahead of him. And right now, as I look at it, he's sort of fallen to that Maurice Jones-Drew, Steven Jackson, down into that tier. So, and that's a mid-second round tier.
Yeah. RB2, you can take your risk, I think.
Yeah, that's a mid-second round pick for me. So that's sort of where he drops. All those guys you listed out, there's 7, 8, 9 guys I'm going to be more comfortable with. And if I'm going to take that risk, if I'm late in the first round, maybe I go ahead and go after Calvin or AJ or one of these guys and swing back, and I'll take my risk at them in the second round and try and build from there.
Absolutely. But no, turning back over to the NFC North a little bit there, and, you know, just sort of wrapping up the talk on those fantasy running backs, I mean, I think the value is going to be had, with Trent Richardson. Obviously, here's a guy whose ADP is between rounds 5 through 10 overall there, so you're going to get him at a good price. And then I think you can add Ray Rice to the list. I mean, everybody's talking about, all worried about Bernard Pierce having a bigger role. And, I mean, there's a lot of question marks, so I'm sure we'll talk about here in a second with the Ravens, but, you know, offense in general. But, I mean, Ray Rice, when you draft him, you don't have to worry about it. This guy's never missed a game in his entire career. He's still, you know, pretty young. I mean, obviously has some mileage on there, but I really expect them to utilize him and more ways than he's ever been utilized before in the slot, as a receiver. I mean, you're looking at a running back that, yeah, he might lose a little time to Bernard Pierce, and Pierce and him could be on the field a lot at the same time, but Ray Rice is going to get 60, almost 70 receptions for sure if he's able to stay healthy for those 16 games.
Yeah, I'll never understand it in doing the mocks I've done, some of the early drafts I've done. Ray Rice is a guy I'm getting 7th, 8th, 9th overall. Look, this guy was a consensus top three last season. Every draft went top three. Did nothing outside of the ordinary, nothing to drop him down. Now all of a sudden he's down there 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th sometimes. It makes no sense to me. Bernard Pierce, he had a nice little run through the playoffs through late in the year. You got a weapon like Ray Rice. You nailed it. The big thing for me, write down 60 catches. That's going to be the bottom line for Ray Rice. It can only go up for there with all their questions at wide receivers. And no one can explain to me why he's dropped this way.
No, I mean, it is a little baffling. I think a lot of it is the depth at the position, which, like I said, running backs are not as, you know, they're definitely scarce, but there's top 10 or 12. It's a little deeper than we've seen. And Pierce is going to be a factor. I think Pierce is impressive. And, you know, sort of turning our focus there to that passing game, or, you know, the entire offense for that matter for the Ravens. I mean, Dennis Pitta, it wasn't 24 hours before Dennis Pitta was lost for the season that I was proclaiming on my show on SiriusXM that I think Dennis Pitta is, if not a top five, will be a top three fantasy tight end and the leader in receptions for this football team. And you lose him, and you also lose Bolden in free agency. The Ravens did little to address it in terms of bringing in any veterans. Obviously, here in the 11th hour, they brought in Brandon Stokely, and 37 years old, and tight end Dallas Clark, 34 years old, both of these guys coming off their couch, basically, to be part of training camp. But, I mean, that passing game's in real trouble. I mean, Joe Flacco, this huge contract coming off of a Super Bowl season. Now, I still think overall this guy's probably one of the top 5, 6, maybe 7 quarterbacks in the league. But without the weapons there, I mean, this is a guy that I'm not even thinking about him as a QB2. I dropped him all the way down from maybe 15 or 16 in my rankings that I started way back in April to where now he's dropped almost 10 spots, barely ahead of a guy like Alex Smith. And I look at that Ravens offense as, you know, an offense that's just going to struggle to move the ball. And I think with that, they're going to have to get creative. Now, that said, I think that you have the best coaching staff in the division, if not in the entire conference. Once again, leading that charge, and hopefully they can get some things unique. And it's all going to come down to defense. And I think their defense, while everybody thinks it's going to take a big step back with Ray Lewis and Ed Reed and those names we came comfortable there, I think their defense is going to be better than advertised. That's why I'm picking the Ravens to actually contend with the be the team that contends with the Bengals there at the top four of the division. I see the Bengals probably finishing about the same they did last year, about 10-6, maybe 11-5. I think just right there behind them, you're going to see Baltimore, you know, fare a little bit better. But from a fantasy standpoint, not a lot of excitement.
Yeah, about the only other name to even talk about on that offense, Torrey Smith being drafted is a sort of a mid-tier wide receiver too. Would you be comfortable with him there? I'm not so sure I am.
You know, I mean, I think he's a great talent. I don't know. I think he's a little bit more of a one-trick pony. I mean, the guy's a great deep threat, one of the best in the league, but you know, without a true wide receiver one on the other side of him to take some of that pressure off, now he's getting double covered, and there's not a lot there at anywhere else in the passing game. So I really have my concerns from a, you know, I'm not even looking at him as maybe a high-end wide receiver three, which would put him outside of my top 25 at wide receiver. I mean, he's going to have some big games. He's surely going to get a lot of targets, but, I mean, he's going to be doubled up, fellas, or he's going to be lined up against that team's best corner almost week in and week out. And that's something he never even had an experience at the college level, much less the professional level. So,
yeah, I agree.
I think there's a lot of great receivers sitting there, and some that are going to play a lot more exciting offense. Where you look at his ADP, where, you know, I mean, he's going somewhere between round 6 and 8, depending on your format. And I don't know. I think he might be overvalued, in my opinion.
I agree 100% on the whole Baltimore thing that you were talking about. Pitt is gone. Questions about Ed Dixon. Bolden's already gone. And let's face it, Bolden was a guy that was making the spectacular catches in the playoffs. I've been touting on our show here that I'm not buying into Joe Flacco air show from the playoffs. I mean, I like Joe Flacco as an NFL quarterback. As a fantasy quarterback, I don't really want him, and I just don't think he has the weapons. However, that being said, I really think that translates into a lot more value for Ray Rice.
I agree. I think Ray Rice, I mean, and that's why Ray Rice has come at such a value, because I think a lot of people are sharing our same opinion, Jared. Like, this offense is sort of scary. A little bit of it to do with Bernard Pierce, but, I mean, Ray Rice is still a guy that, like I said, I mean, the biggest thing is durability. I mean, the fact that this guy doesn't miss ball games, that's something that there's not a lot of running backs that you can say that about that you're going to draft in the first round this year. He is the most durable one of them all. And you know, Bernard Pierce is a guy that, yeah, he might be a little bit too overhyped, but I think Bernard Pierce and Ray Rice could both have nice value. Outside of that, Torrey Smith's probably overrated. I'm with you on Flacco. The Ravens, they're nothing special from a fantasy standpoint. So, yeah, it's slim pickings in Baltimore this season when you're looking to build your fantasy squad.
So let's move on to Cincinnati. I don't think a lot to discuss with A.J. Green. Pretty much unanimous, a number two overall wide receiver at a minimum in the top three or four. Anybody behind A.J. Green? Nobody emerged last year. There's a lot of talk about Mohamed Sanu, some different guys they had in camp. Nobody really emerged. It was A.J. Green and everybody else. Anybody on the verge of emerging this season?
I think there's a lot of breakout candidates in this offense. I've had the luxury of actually going down to camp a few times, witnessing, you know, up close and, you know, being so close to the team and talking to guys to cover daily, you know, on a pretty regular basis. The wide receiver position last year, Mohamed Sanu is a player that, I mean, if it wasn't for that knee injury in practice there, I think we would have seen him finish with the bang. In the four games he was there, it was the most productive that offense looked as a whole. But he's battling for a job with a fellow second-year receiver, Marvin Jones, who's, you know, had a little minor injury or two during this summer that sort of slowed it down. But I think there's real sleeper potential in Marvin Jones. If you're in a deeper fantasy league where you're going more than 16 rounds, he's a guy that I'm going to grab because he could end up being the starter. Sanu's a guy that's built in the T.J. Houshmandzadeh mold, definitely could have a big role in the red zone. I look for him to be a good fantasy receiver, four or five. The real breakout candidate in the passing game, though, comes at tight end Tyler Eifert. I drafted him 14th round out of 16 in the SiriusXM Fantasy League and the Experts League there, and took a little bit of flack for it. People call me a homer or what have you, but I've gone out as one of my bold predictions for this season, telling you that this guy's going to catch 60 balls as a rookie. I think he's going to be a top 10 fantasy tight end. It's going undrafted, really, and probably about 30% of leagues out there. This guy's a free agent right now. People are a little gun shy because Jermaine Gresham's there. They're going to use a lot of two tight end sets. They're moving Eifert around everywhere. When I was down there in May at minicamp watching, I was like, holy cow, all the years of sitting there watching football at all levels from high school all the way up, I've never seen a tight end line up in so many different positions, you know, in his first practice. And I'll tell you, Tyler Eifert has all the tools. Now, are there enough targets to go around in the passing game? That's going to be the thing. But as far as A.J. Green, he's definitely going to have the help this year to take some pressure off, which keeps him up as one of the football's top receivers, not just in talent, but in terms of production. And then I think with that, you can find fantasy value. Eifert, I wouldn't touch Jermaine Gresham. I think he's going to block a little bit more. He's going to have some role, but not a consistent one in the passing game in terms of catches. But you know, you look at the real value here, fellas, I think it's going to come with the rookie, Giovanni Bernard. I mean, Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis, not the playmaker they want. He's still probably going to get 6 to 8 touchdowns, maybe even more. The guy that maybe could get 600-700 yards working that short yardage, the goal line situation. But Giovanni Bernard is a dynamic football player. He's sliding into the fifth round of a lot of fantasy drafts. If you can get him as your RB3, especially if you're playing in a points-per-reception league, you're going to be so far ahead of your opponents, and I think it's going to be realized very early in the season. And if he can take the later the year goes, I think you're going to see him get more and more carries, so he's just going to keep getting better.
Yeah, that was one of the questions we were going to hit on. You know, a lot of guys have really been highly touting him that he's going to dethrone Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis, and from everything you said, he seems to be fitting the bill. And that kind of goes, you've almost answered one of the questions we're going to ask, like the one player out of the division who just may emerge as a star in 2013. Cincinnati's probably certainly has the biggest chance to have him. You know, mentioning Bernard, mentioning Eifert, maybe Le'Veon Bell out of Pittsburgh. But, those are probably about the three leading candidates as far as rookies is emerging as stars.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, offensively anyway. I mean, I think you have some guys maybe on the other side of the football that could be thrown into that conversation. Le'Veon Bell, I mean, here's a back that from you look at the talent. I'm not getting as excited about Le'Veon Bell as some of the other guys in this draft, but, I mean, assuming that this foot injury that we're looking at now isn't going to be something that derails him at all. I mean, he's a guy that I'm very excited about coming out of Pittsburgh just based off of his opportunity. I mean, clearly they weren't happy with Isaac Redman or Jonathan Dwyer or Batch or any of the
Chris
six Rainey, seven running backs
that
started there last year. I can't remember them all. But, I mean, Bell is a three-down type back. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, look, Bell is definitely a back that can handle it, not only pounding that ball and moving it on first and second down, but he's a guy that is a deceivingly good receiving ability. I mean, a lot of people don't think he's the type of guy that's going to catch the ball out of the backfield a ton. I think with him, I mean, yeah, the opportunities are there. He's going to have to stay healthy, but I still got a lot of question marks about Pittsburgh's offensive line. I'm sure you guys are, a little bit more familiar. Maybe you guys are a little more optimistic that things are going to be better this year. I think
we're pushing the panic.
DeCastro and a healthy season out of him.
We're pushing the panic button already. Don't worry about
it. Yeah, it is. The offensive line is it is just making you sweat bullets watching these guys. I mean, everybody in Pittsburgh, everybody was healthy, and it was going to be finally this line that highly drafted is going to be together, and Ben's going to be protected. And it was just the same old shtick last night against Washington, even with some of these zone blocking schemes and so forth. The first game, they seemed to run a little bit better. But I tell you, I saw DeCastro, I saw Adams, I saw just about every one of them get beat pretty badly on a lot of plays.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't have a chance to watch the entire game, but in the beginning of the game, I was catching. I mean, it's the thing. And Ben Roethlisberger, I mean, I was a big fan of Ben even when he played at Miami University here. He's a guy that, I mean, he's such a big guy. He's able to avoid that. But, I mean, he's 31 years old now. He's played 16 games once in his entire career. And I just think he's going to take a beating behind there. And the thing about that offense that is going to really just, to me, is the black hole there is the fact that Heath Miller was such a big part of it last year. Enjoyed such a great season and then just shredded his leg. I mean, sounds like he's making a good recovery, but is this guy going to be able to get back on the field? Now, I originally tried to pencil Pittsburgh in as a 6-10 finisher in last place in this division. I very well think they could be in last place, but I think they're going to do better in 6-10. I look at this schedule, and I'm not one to look too much into schedules because things change so much year to year, but you look at Pittsburgh's schedule in particular, and three of their road games, one of them's in London against Minnesota, so it's not even a true road game. I'm venturing to guess there's going to be a lot of Steelers fans ready to watch them in London. And then you also have road games at Oakland, which to me is the worst team in football. That's preceded by
Pittsburgh last year.
The Jets. So in a span of about 5 weeks, they play one home game against Baltimore. They got a bye in those three road games. And, I mean, the Baltimore at home, that's always a game Pittsburgh is going to compete in there. I think they got three very winnable games. So I'm looking at this stretch, and, there's a good chance to win four games in 5 weeks. So got to get out of the gate. If you can take two of those first three against Tennessee – at Cincinnati, obviously, on Monday night, and then Chicago. If somehow they can come out 2-1 there and then go into that stretch, I think they're going to be fine. But, that's a big what-if, fellas. I mean, they have to do it because things are only going to get tougher down the second half when now you're going to at New England. You've got to still play the rest of the division one more time. At Green Bay in Week 16 is not going to be a picnic. So they have to get out of the gate faster. I think they're going to find themselves in a hole they're not going to be able to dig out of.
Yeah, no question about it. Sort of a season that could break either way between 10-6 or 6-10, just depending on the breaks. Last thing before we get out of here.
I think we just described all the teams in the division.
Well, that's very true, exactly. The last thing I want to look at, the Steelers receiver core, Mike Wallace gone. You talk about Torrey Smith and a one-trick pony. Sort of always felt that way about Mike Wallace. You got Antonio Brown moving up to the number one, Emmanuel Sanders at two. With the offensive line concerns, with Heath Miller being out, Antonio Brown's a guy last year who was pretty solid, at least penciled in going into the season as a number two fantasy wide receiver. Does this guy maintain that level? Does Emmanuel Sanders come up? Are neither of them, you know, maybe above a wide receiver three? I have a lot of question marks with that receiving core.
Yeah, I love Antonio Brown, especially in PPR leagues. I mean, the big question for him has always been touchdowns. I mean, here's a guy that I think he had six touchdowns before last season, and then he scored like in four straight games to end the year. Six touchdowns has been like his mark, but then last year, the way he came up at the end with all the touchdowns. I think Antonio Brown is a favorite of Ben Roethlisberger, too. You know, I talked to Will Graves. He's pretty regularly on our show. He covers the Steelers for the Associated Press. He's a big fantasy guy, and he's certainly got a man crush on Antonio Brown, but, you know, he thinks he's going to be a great value pick, but you know who really excites me as a potential sleeper there is the Wheaton kid. You know, I liked him right in college. You know, and then entering the draft, I thought he was a pretty appealing, pretty appealing option. And he ends up in Pittsburgh, where, you know, they let Mike Wallace go. Now, I'm with you. I think Mike Wallace was, you know, definitely a one-trick pony, but a very important part of this offense because he demanded attention, and that opened the door up underneath for guys like Antonio Brown. But Antonio Brown, I'd say he's a wide receiver, too. I think Emmanuel Sanders, probably a wide receiver four in the 12-team league. And Marcus Wheaton, a late-round stab and a guy you want to lock up in dynasty formats. But I think with Big Ben, you know, it's all going to come down to that protection. And, the better that line performs and the more they can get out of their running game, I think you're going to be able to get it done. But this receiving core, top to bottom, I'd probably rank it as the third best in the division.
Yeah, sort of seems to be where they rank just about everywhere. Well, Dan, we have run over. We sure appreciate your time. Why don't you tell everybody where they can hear you and where they can find you?
Yeah, definitely appreciate being on, fellas. Hopefully maybe we come back on during the regular season, talk a little more. You definitely check us out at getsportsinfo.com. That's my website and blog. I talk a lot of football there. On SiriusXM, that's Sirius 210 XM 87, Fantastics Insider Football. We do it Saturday mornings, 10 to 1 Eastern. And then locally here in Cincinnati on Fox Sports 1360, you can listen in Sunday mornings at foxsports1360.com.
All right, Dan, thank you very much. That was Dan Claskins, and definitely like to have you back on again. It was a great conversation, and I think we can really get some stuff going when the season starts.
All right, looks like Dan is gone. I hope I didn't do that. I don't know if he did it or I did it, but we'll shoot him a tweet and apologize nonetheless.
You'll do that because you did it.
I don't know that I did. All right, Rick, well, we have blown past it, but there's one piece of business I want to cover, and I'm surprising you with this. As you told a listener on Twitter last night that we would not be doing this, I'm making an executive decision, meaning I'll do all the work.
Well, of course you will, because I am not.
Well, I'll do all the talk, and in the end, you'll have to do the work. And Rick, I think we need to do a listener league or two, perhaps. So here's what I want to do. We'll keep it real simple, 12-team league. Maybe we'll even do two. If we get, 22 guys interested, we'll do two leagues, perhaps. But here's what we'll do. We'll just use NFL.com. We'll announce the draft date. So here's what you got to do. If you want to play with us, we'll get some other guys on we have on the show fairly often. Maybe it'll be an experts listener, and then wherever we fit into that, probably somewhere in the middle, because we're certainly not experts at anything. But let's do some leagues. Shoot us an email, asylumfootball@gmail.com, or send us a message on Twitter, @asylumfootball. If you're interested, send us your email address. I will get that set up. We will draft probably Tuesday or Wednesday, right before the season starts, because that's when you should really be drafted. We'll just do it online, and we'll come up with some sort of fabulous prize. We're about due for some T-shirts or some footballs or something on it. No money, just a pride thing, and certainly we'll have some sort of prize for any listener who can take us down, which isn't going to be that hard. So, Rick, you don't look too angry that I've made this decision.
You're going to run it. I mean, you started the Asylum on Ice Hockey League.
I did.
I promptly went out, took it down.
Well, only because I took horrific injuries down the stretch.
Took the title down.
Horrific
injuries. Let's just stop with the whining and crying, and I'll do the same to this.
All right. Well, I don't think you're going to win anything because it's fantasy football. It's not your strong suit. So you're really just here for your good looks, is what you do. And notice it's a radio show.
Yeah.
Well, that's it. The other announcement, starting September 8th, 10 to 11:30, I believe it is, or 10 to noon, something like that. We will be starting our Sunday morning call-in show. We'll help set your lineups. We will go around the league. We want to get guys like Dan and other local experts of certain teams on-site reporting. We're going to try and go legit here. So starting Sunday morning, September 8th, Rick, my mind just went blank. What are we calling that show? The Sunday morning inside slant. You just left me hanging again, you dick. This is what he does. I'm so tired of this. It means one of two things. Either he's just leaving me hang or he wasn't listening. Were you in the chat room again? Is
no.
that what was going
no,
on?
I was letting you hang this time. No, it's the Asylum Football Inside Slant on Sunday mornings.
Yeah, so check that out. Spread the word for us. Love to get some calls, your last-minute lineup decisions as you're sitting there setting your 27 lineups.
Yeah, we probably could have had Dan help pass along, but you cut him off. So probably last.
I think Dan hung up on us because he was tired of you, but that's just one man's opinion. So, Rick, we blew almost 10 full minutes over. Not very professional of us, unquestionably. So let's
we're doing everybody a favor.
Well, that's true. That is what we do. So thanks for listening. We'll be back next Tuesday on the Blitz with...
thanks to Keith Reed and thanks to Dan Klassen tonight. Next week we have Dennis Farrell from... I think he's NBC now.
NBC, so, Fantasy Sideline Show,
yep.
Armed Forces Network. Dennis is everywhere, just out there killing it. Can't wait to get him back on, let you two flat fight again like you did previously.
We're going at it.
So that's it. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Check us out, AsylumFantasyFootball.com, AsylumFootball@gmail.com if you want to be part of the Asylum Listener League. At Asylum Football on Twitter, and thank you to our friends at 88.1 FM WSRU, the voice of the rock. Until next week, we'll see you.
Take care.